we rejoin you coast to coast and around the world as well. And all of you folks who listen in the future on the archives over Soundwaves 2000, we welcome you as well. Tom Harrison is here. Michael Roll is here talking about life after and materialization mediums. Mrs. Harrison, Tom's mother, was a remarkable lady. Tom, again, how many sessions altogether were there?
Well, over the years, Jeff, there were probably 350, between 300 and 350 sessions over the years.
And approximately how many different people materialized? Did you count ever?
Not exactly how many different, but in total, including people like Aunt Ag and Granny who came most weeks, not every week, but most weeks.
Yes.
I have met and shaken hands with, or in the case of people we knew, embraced them and kissed them, about 1,500 solid ectoplasmic people.
That's an awful lot of experience. Your mother passed away and the session stopped. Can you tell us how it was toward the end and what the last session was like, perhaps? Anything unusual there that
We obviously didn't know when the last session would be.
Yes, yes.
Because of my mother's illness.
Yes.
But the tape recording, which you've listened to part of, that particular session with the Christmas party, was one of the last ones in January 1954.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 8 years after my mother passed over in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't sit very much after then, just occasionally, but not very much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The health wasn't happening. Can I come back to the one thing that was raised about trickery?
Of course.
As you say, people are thinking, well, it's all tricks. The medium just dresses up and does things.
Certainly. Well, people are conditioned to think that way, among other things. But go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, but if I say, the question of trickery, there has to be a motive. What is the motive for tricking people into believing something? Because often the motive is money, is finance. In our case, no such thing. We had something like 200 guest sitters, people, visitors, who came and met their loved ones, met Aunt Ag, met the others, and they were charged nothing at all. There was never any charge made. My mother would go spare if you started talking about money. She used to say, I have a gift, I want to help people, and I will do it. No, it's not going to cost anybody any money at all. So there's no motive for trickery. I think that's important.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's with the Rita Gould experience.
Mm-hmm.
Rita Gould was forbidden by her etheric team to take one penny, not even for the food that she provided. So I just confirm that Tom's right there.
Michael Roll, how many people like yourself and like Tom Harrison, who have had these direct experiences with materialized beings, humans, do you know of in your life right now?
Well, at the moment, very exciting things are happening. I don't want to move away from what Tom's saying, but say quickly that
yes.
At the moment, one of the leading members of the Society for Psychical Research,
mm-hmm.
Montague Keane, witnessed a full materialization medium only a month or so ago and did a full report, which is on Tom Jones's website.
Very
He's actually got the full report there,
okay.
Where he reports that Louis Armstrong fully materialized.
Louis Armstrong?
This is my dream coming true. Recently deceased internationally famous people. Now, if you look on Tom Jones' website, you'll see he's got the full report of Montague Keane's report, a leading member of the Society for Psychical Research.
Mm-hmm.
And the extraordinary thing is that Montague Keane died just after he put that report into Tom's website.
Oh, really?
And he has now come back via that same medium that he witnessed Louis Armstrong materializing. So we're progressing very fast at the moment, Jeff. It's all happening, and we're just asking these mediums if we can now go in with the night vision goggles. Our scientific team with Professor Peter Wadhams and people like that can
yes.
go in and witness Montague Keane coming back, and then we can get his wife in there to have a chat to him. So it's all following on pretty quickly at the moment.
So, yeah, amazing. All right, yeah. Let's get back to Tom Harrison's story then. Okay, Tom, by the way, those of you who are online, keep trying, and we understand that more and more people are able to get through now to Tom Jones' website, and Tom has put together a wonderful presentation about Tom Harrison's remarkable life experiences, photographs and everything. Okay, Tom.
Right. As I said, the Christmas party sitting was the only one we ever had recorded up to that time.
Mm-hmm.
We did have some recordings a bit later, but it was all a question of cost and not realizing how valuable these tapes would have been if we'd kept them.
Yes.
It didn't mean that to us. It was just a family circle, meeting our loved ones each week. And there was no need to record everything and keep it. But we did keep the one of the Christmas party,
mm-hmm.
which was the one that Chris Eldon Lee, the radio producer, used for the thing that the broadcast that Michael mentioned, Christmas Spirits. That was the one he used.
How was
some of the, yes?
Yes. How was your feeling when there was a materialized person in front of you, Aunt Ag or whomever? Were you still in awe, and were you somewhat deferential? Were you? How did you approach them? Yeah. It had to leave you with a bizarre feeling of certainly comfort, but on the other hand, you knew this was not, as we know them, people. This was something else. I just wonder how you felt inside.
Well, at the beginning, as I said, it was a bit awe-inspiring. It felt a bit, oh dear, what's happening? But later we got used to them coming regularly. It was a weekly meeting between our friends from the spirit world, and it was also natural. There was no question of, no point of deference in any way.
Mm-hmm.
They were just people,
mm-hmm.
our own
mm-hmm.
people wanting to come and talk to
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with the people, the visitors who came and sat. They just found it so natural. They were emotional when they met their own people, but afterwards, when we having our cup of tea and a sandwich, they used to say, well, it was all so natural. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Yes.
Nothing at all.
About how many, Tom, just in round numbers, visitors came to the sittings and got to see their loved ones? And you mentioned a total of approximately 1,500 materializations, many multiple
yes.
times. But how many people would be invited, would come and see a lost loved one?
About 200. About 200 visitors came.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have visitors every week because we had to have weeks for development, for further development of the spirit people. As Michael said, we had a team of about 20 chemists, we were told, doing the work behind the scenes to build. So we didn't have visitors every week. But when we did have visitors, there may have been one, maybe two, three. Sometimes we had five or six visitors, which was a bit crowded in that little room.
I would gather, yes. Now, you mentioned scientists on the other side. Michael calls
yes.
them etheric scientists,
chemists. Yes.
Were they working, in this case, with your mother, doing something through her to facilitate the availability of ectoplasm?
Yes, that's right. They have to work through my mother's facility within her. We don't know what ectoplasm is, although we have had pieces cut off. Mr. Jones did cut pieces of the ectoplasm under permission, of course. That's the vital thing to remember. Under permission.
Did he?
We cut pieces. Yes. And then he took some of the liquid away. I mean, the stories, frankly, Jeff, are so long to explain to you how it was done that we haven't the time on a program like this.
Well, I'm curious about this. I don't want to let this go. This is fascinating. Now, this is not necessarily ectoplasm, i.e., a piece of your mother's being, is it? Or is she just a conduit for this ectoplasmic energy to
yeah.
manifest itself? So, if
that's
you cut
a
piece
word for it,
okay.
Conduit.
If you cut a piece of it off, you're not cutting a piece of Minnie Harrison off.
No. But this was the point where they warned us in advance, is that when Mr. Jones had his scissors and Aunt Aggie materialized in front of him, held up the gown that she was wearing, the white gown, as you will see in the photographs. He had to cut off a piece about the size of a lady's handkerchief. And we were warned that you would hear Antag with a little gasp of air. We heard my mother behind the curtain also the same way because of the shock of cutting the ectoplasm. And my mother was told, or we were told, my mother would feel as though she'd been hit in the stomach when she came back out of trance, which she did. We didn't say anything to her, but when we came, when we closed the circle and we were having our cup of tea, my mum was rubbing her stomach. I said, got trouble, Mum? She said, I don't know. It's just as though somebody's hit me in the stomach. And then we told her. Well, that was because Mr. Jones had cut a piece of ectoplasm off. Oh, she said, I see. Never mind. It went.
How
we
interesting.
We were told it would go.
What did Mr. Jones end up with in his hand after cutting a piece of this off when the session was over?
Well, a piece of gossamer. He didn't finish it in his hand. It was after he'd cut it off. It was passed round the circle.
Yes.
Everybody felt it, soft, gossamer-like.
Yes.
And then we'd been asked to have a jar on the mantelpiece. It's an empty jar.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit chemist would put some liquid in it to help preserve it. And while Andag was standing there, I finished up with the ectoplasm in my hand. I passed it back to Doris, my wife, and she went to pass it back to Andag, and Andag said, no, just put it in the jar. So Doris put the ectoplasm in the jar, and in the jar we could see in the red light there was about an inch of liquid, which we hadn't put in, which again was an apport in effect. The spirit chemist, the etheric chemist, had put that in.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andag asked for the jar and the lid. Doris passed the jar to Andag, and she screwed the lid on. The materialized spirit person standing there just screwed the lid on the jar.
Amazing.
And put it back on the mantelpiece.
Stand by, Tom, if you would, please. We have another break, and we'll come right back with more. Okay, we're back. All right, Tom Harrison, what happened to the jar with the 1 inch of liquid and the
right.
piece of gossamer ectoplasm?
Well, it stood there for, it was about 3 days. It was left on the mantelpiece in Sid and Gladys's room. And I used to go around every day just to have a look, see what was happening.
What color was it?
Well, the liquid was white when it started, but the liquid became yellowish. Gradually, the ectoplasm dissolved into the liquid. And by Wednesday, that was 4 days later, it had all dissolved into the liquid, and there was a yellowish liquid in the bottom of the jar. Now, Mr. Jones took half of that to his laboratory in the hospital and analyzed it.
Mm-hmm.
And his results were very similar to those of Schrenk Notzing, who Michael may have mentioned previously. But Schrenk Notzing was a German scientist who tested a woman called Eva C. for about 3 years. People like that. And it was the same kind of result. And the crystal he got from it was, he said, bleach-like crystal.
Hmm.
Because if I also mention that ectoplasm does have an acrid smell at first. When the people build and walk out, you can just smell this acrid smell with them. But it soon disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how he described the ectoplasm after it had been cut off. That was done twice, and the results were much the same each time.
The appearance of materialized people was accompanied never, sometimes, or how often by any aromas. Were there ever any perfumes or smells or senses go ahead.
Yes, there was this, to a degree, an unpleasant smell. I think bearing in mind that the ectoplasm comes from within the medium's body, then obviously you're going to have a certain aroma with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't stay very long, but it is there, and it was there every time.
This is very interesting. You were talking about 1954, Tom, weren't you? when...
That's right, 40s.
Yeah, well, just 2 years after that, Helen Duncan was killed by the police raid in 1956.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
And when she materialized at the Rita Gould experiment, she told me that they have been working ever since 1956, the etheric scientists, to make the ectoplasm so much more finer. So when I witnessed it in 1983... The ectoplasm had been completely refined. You couldn't see that there was any covering at all round the people who materialized at the Rita Gould experiment. So that's exactly what they have done. They said right. It's still there, but it's so fine you can't even feel it or sense it at all. So that's interesting.
Yes.
Carry on, Tom.
Right. You were also interested in perhaps one or two of the other voices that were recorded.
Yes, we have a break coming up in about a minute and a half, so let's hold that until after the break.
Yes.
The go ahead.
Go on.
No, go, Tom, please.
Well, I was going to say, one of them that we're going to play just a little of is a lady called Granny Lumsden, was my first wife's grandmother,
uh-huh.
who built regularly. Now, you may have problems understanding what she's saying, because she had a typical... Middlesbrough accent.
Oh, I see.
Which the American people may not be able to pick up. But I can explain what she said afterwards. But I think it's important that you know of her, because I have a story about her and her cold feet and legs.
Ah, very good. Now, if Aunt Ag had been standing next to you and she took your hand, as she did,
yeah.
and your father's hand, and you dozens of times...
Yes. Yes.
If you had asked her to breathe in your face, to exhale, would there have been movement of air? I'm assuming there would have been, because she was manifesting a solid, dense body.
Oh, yes. Yes, there would have been. Yes, you would have sensed a movement of air if we'd done that. But honestly, we never thought about it.
Uh-huh.
We were not so... As Michael is not so scientific about it, it was just a natural form every week, and we were just enjoying the benefit of materialized people being with us.
Did you tell...
When my father materialized, we couldn't smell the actual old ectoplasm, which Tom is talking about,
mm-hmm.
because it's so refined, but my father fully materialized, and of course I was hit by his earthly smells. Heavy smoker, heavy drinker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I'm wondering, Tom, when you come back, we'll listen to the tape, but a quick question. Did you try to tell many of your friends outside of family and the circle about these sittings? Give me a very short answer, please.
Oh, yes. Yes, pass the information on to lots of people.
And what was their response?
A little bit incredulous at first, but then when we've invited them to come and sit with us...
Yes.
Then they soon found out that it wasn't so incredulous as they thought.
Well, fascinating. All right. Very good. Stand by. I'll be right back with Tom Harrison and Michael Roll in just a couple minutes. Okay, we're back. Let's get right back to our guests, Michael Roll and Tom Harrison. Okay, Tom, let's hear about Granny, and here's some more tapes,
right.
please.
Thank you. Granny Lumsden, yes. If I explain, Granny was Doris's grandmother, and she used to come regularly every week, just chatting to us and going around. She used to call herself the warm-up woman, believe it or not. She used to walk around the room. When we had guest sitters, she'd walk around, shake hands with them, and say, "Are you all right? Are you enjoying it? I'm the warm-up woman." She used to come first and make people feel at home. That was her purpose particularly. But this night of the recording, when she came, we had four guest sitters that night, including Granny's daughter, Mrs. Hudson, my wife's mother,
okay.
of course. And we had other people as guests as well. One, another Mrs. Harrison, no relative. And you'll hear Mrs. Harrison meeting Granny. We took her over to meet her. So I will play Granny now, and I hope you'll be able to follow the accent. If not, I'll have to explain it.
Okay.
Hello, Mother?
Hello.
How are you going on?
All right, Charlie, you know.
Oh, I
you know that, don't you?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. How are you?
How
all together.
Yes. Well, give
you
my love.
Oh, I will.
We're having everything recorded tonight.
I know. Yes, I know. They told me all about it.
Oh, you're here, Granny.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you see me?
Yes,
can you see all right?
It's
part of the light, love.
Yes,
down a bit. There she is.
Yeah, she's funny.
Now, Mrs. Harrison is shaking hands with Granny here.
I'm not here long tonight,
no. Well, would you like to give a message to the people of this side?
Yes.
Oh, well, aren't we always giving messages to them?
Without any specials.
For me, you want to...
Oh, believe that. To Mrs. Abbott when she comes,
all
shall
right,
we?
Then, if you want
yes. She can talk better than I can, you know.
You know, Maxie, you don't...
Well, she can't talk anymore. I don't mean that. Oh, I know, Maxie. Yes, of course I know. Yes. But you know what I mean, Maxie? She can put her words better than I can. I can't talk like she can. I can talk. Oh, we can all talk, can't we?
All right,
you're
right there, girl. You're right there.
Yes, yes. But you know, it's nice to come, don't you?
Yes.
And we do like to talk to you all, don't we?
Yes. Yes.
But you know, I couldn't preach at you.
No, we don't want that.
Hey? No.
Always.
Well, no, I'm going because there's such a lot of one to come tonight.
All right,
so I'll say, cheerio, everybody.
Hello, Jeff.
Well, hello, Tom. That's another amazing experience just to hear that. Now, who was the male voice that was in both
me.
Examples? That's you talking.
I was doing a complete commentary on the whole night, an hour and a half sitting, that was.
I see.
It's an extract from it, and I was giving a complete commentary throughout
yes.
the whole night.
Yes, yes, I understood that. Okay, you described how she was shaking hands and so forth.
That's
what,
right.
What again... What we have here, and I would ask those of you who are skeptical, and I certainly appreciate that very much. It's true skeptics are essential to the process.
Oh, yes.
The bogus skeptics are useless. Remember all the programs we've done over the years of electronic voice phenomena, EVP, recording voices of discarnate individuals. And remember how many times the voices... are directly related to the conversations of those on this side who are making the recordings. They're interactive. Keep that in mind, and it might help you bridge to what Tom is reporting tonight that he experienced for 8 years, all of these sessions. It's for a lot of you, I know it's too long of a stretch right now. I'm fascinated by this. I would have loved to have been there. I think all of us would. I think you can hear... in the voices of the two people, Aunt Agnes and Granny, two entirely different human beings, two entirely different personalities, two entirely different voices and vocal ranges, nuances, and all the rest of it, to have, and again I play just devil's advocate, Tom, for a moment, excuse
yeah,
me,
sure,
but
sure.
to have tried to have duped 6 or 7 people sitting in a 10-by-12 room with 6 or 7 materialized people from the other side in one session, each
yes,
with a different
personality,
one at a time, each with a different personality and all that.
That's right.
Is absurd to even think about. It just doesn't work. I mean,
I
there are no doors
that.
Opening and closing, none of that. It's they're in the room and that's it.
Yep.
So what do we have here, folks? You have to ask yourself very serious questions. And then hopefully you're interested enough to click on Tom Harrison's name, and go to the website put together by the remarkable Tom Jones, look at the pictures, read more about it, and then make a decision. Or maybe you don't want to make a decision, but at least process the data. It's fascinating. Tom?
Yes. Further to the website of Tom Jones, can I just mention that I have now written a 70,000 word book which has more photographs in it, all these stories, a lot more stories, of course, which is just ready, waiting for a publisher.
Oh, really?
So I'm looking forward to it. Yep. I've got it all ready.
Okay.
It's all just waiting.
All of you agents out there, if you're interested in a book that clearly is going to be more than a conversation piece, photographs, stories, written by Tom Harrison, you can certainly contact me. I'll get word right to Tom. That's
yes, well,
fine.
I can give you a website, too, or an email.
Good, Tom. I was going to ask for that. Go right ahead.
Right. It is just Life After Death. This is all lowercase figures,
yes.
Letters. At Bigfoot.com.
All right. Life After Death, all lowercase, at
yes.
Bigfoot.com. Now, that's
yes,
simple enough.
The title of the book will be Life After Death, Living Proof.
Sounds like a great book, 70,000 words. Ready to go, publishers. So if your publishing
yep.
company is wallowing in mediocrity, this may be a chance for you to step out and do something
yep.
unique. Okay, stand by. Great. We'll be right back with Michael Roll and Tom Harrison after this. Did you know? Okay, and we're back. Michael, we have one segment left. Let's get a comment from you, then we'll go back to Tom and ask him to touch on another couple of things he thinks are most important for this visit. And that's about all the time we're going to have. So, Michael?
Yes, well, I've just been, as you know, absolutely enthralled listening to Tom, and I've learned an awful lot tonight.
Yes.
So let's go back and just hear what he has to say. I'm thrilled to bits.
Very good. Okay. All right, Tom, go ahead. The stage is yours.
Thank you very much. Can I just say how much I've thoroughly enjoyed it, but didn't realize till a few minutes ago that the 3 hours had almost gone.
It's amazing how quickly it goes. Did you have somewhere
we've hardly covered anything.
I know.
But never mind.
Well, you have it in your 70,000-page book. We have about... 9 minutes left or so here, so there's time
right.
to do some things. Did you want to say anything more about Granny, or was that it?
Yes, please. Can I tell you the story of Granny's feet?
Please.
Good, because, again, it's very interesting and helpful. Granny, as they used to come out and walk around and shake hands with visitors, guest sitters, one night as she was walking around, she said to one lady visitor, "Would you like to feel me feet, love?" And the lady was a bit taken aback. And I said to her, "Granny, what do you mean?" Because, you see, we talked just naturally. There was nothing special about it. I said, what do you mean? Why would she want to feel your feet, Granny? "Well," she said, "my hands are warm, my face is warm," as it was. We always knew that. But she said, "my feet are stone cold," she said, "because when I was on the earth plane, I always had cold feet." And I said, "Well, you don't have cold feet in the spirit world." She said, "Oh, no. Only when I get back into this stuff," as she called it, the ectoplasm. So I said, "Just a minute." So I went over and I said, "Come on then, lift your foot up." So she lifted her foot up and I felt it, and it was like a block of ice. I said, "Oh, it was cold." So that was very good. She did that 2 or 3 times for visitors. We called it her party piece. And then 1 week when we had no visitors, she was standing in the middle of the circle chatting to us. And I just said to her, "Granny, feet cold tonight again?" "Oh, no," she said, "not tonight." So my logic started to work. I said, "But hang on. You said whenever you got into this stuff, into ectoplasm, you had cold feet." She said, "Yes, but you haven't got any visitors tonight." I said, what's that got to do with your feet?" "Well," she said, "you haven't got any visitors, so I haven't bothered to bring me feet." Now, that was a bit of a shock.
Oh,
said,
that's funny.
So she lifted her gown mm-hmm. up to her waist, and there was nothing from her waist down, no legs, no feet in ectoplasm.
Gee.
But obviously, her etheric legs were there,
yeah.
but they weren't covered in ectoplasm. She didn't need to. And I could see my dad across the other side of the room.
What a character, huh?
Absolutely. That was wonderful. And there was one other thing I have to say. You were asking, did they
how did they go back, or how did they disappear?
Yes.
Well, Antag and Granny used to go back behind the curtain, walk back. But some people who were only built for the first time couldn't do that and couldn't stand very long. And they appeared to be going down through the floor. The body sunk and sunk and sunk with the head. And then, but all was happening. It wasn't going through the floor at all. It was going back under the curtain to my mother to be reformed again for the next person.
Oh,
but
really?
It looks as though they're going through the floor, but they don't.
Now, that must have been eerie. Now, the the red light, did
yeah.
any of the manifested people have any coloring about them, or were they all just various shades of white? And
yes.
Okay.
No, various shades of white, yes. Except when Granddad came, my grandfather built. See, there's so many things. When he built complete with beard. And his beard was black. Well, it was dark colored.
Uh-huh.
Before he, I mean, I didn't know my grandfather because I was only a year old when he died in 1919.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he said to me before he left, "Feel my beard, my boy." So I put my hand up to feel his beard, which was all ectoplasm, of course. It wasn't stuck on, but it was just a soft, beautiful, soft beard. And my mother told me afterwards that Granddad would want me to do that because he treasured his beard.
Really?
Yep. So many
funny.
Stories.
Indeed. In the book, how many photographs have you assembled, Tom, approximately?
Well, I've got, of ectoplasmic forms, one, two, I'm looking at them now, three, four, five, six, some taken in it with the infrared light.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you would explain how the photographs were taken, please.
Oh, yes. The original ones were taken in 1948 and taken on quarter plate cameras. Mr. McKenzie, the man who did the recording, came and did the first lot of photographs. They simply set up the camera pointing towards the cabinet where the people would be standing, and then put the plate in, and it was all hit or miss. We didn't know whether we'd ever get anything on them, being in a red light, but they just had a two-minute exposure in most cases, and when they were developed and printed, there they were, complete, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then that Mr. Jones came a couple of months later, mm-hmm. took another two, and then Antag's own son, who was a semi-professional photographer, came and did some more with a film this time instead of plate. And that's showing on the website.
Michael Roll, does this pretty much sync up with other people having taken photographs of materialized people?
Yes. So William Crooks, of course, which Tom got on his
site
as well, he took with flashlight photography.
Uh-huh.
But that's interesting. Aunt Ag's son came. Now, he would know immediately if it's his mother or not.
Oh, sure.
Crushing proof of survival.
Yes. Yes.
That's right. Well, yes, there was no question. He knew his mother was there.
Yes,
and talking
to
him.
In her old voice she had on Earth.
Absolutely. The voice you've heard.
Yes.
Did in every case or nearly every case of people who came to the sittings, who got to see relatives who had moved on, that came back to speak to them, did the relatives always try to comfort them? Was that one of the first things, Tom, that would be said?
Yes, the relatives who came back, you mean?
Yes, yes.
Who material? Yes, they just wanted to comfort their relatives still here on the Earth.
That was the most important message, yes.
Well, that's the message, isn't it? That life goes on. We used to also hear from them, some of them, how they passed on, what it was like when they got there.
Tell me.
Oh, yes?
Tell me a story about that. We have about 3 minutes.
Well, Aunt Ag, for example, when she passed on with a brain hemorrhage suddenly.
Ah.
And she told us she was ready to go to a meeting and never got there. So when we asked her what it was like when she passed over, oh, she said, it was quite wonderful. She said, I suddenly wakened up. I seemed to waken up sitting on a seat in a big garden. It was beautiful, she said. Flowers and trees, which you can't explain. The colors are so different. She said, I suddenly saw a lady walking towards me in the distance, coming up the road. And I thought, oh, who's this? And as she came up, she said, I thought I recognized her, but it wasn't one of my relatives. And she said, when she came up, spoke to me, and welcomed me, she said, I seem to recognize you. And the lady said, yes, you should. I'm one of your spirit guides who's been working with you all your life. Isn't that wonderful?
It is.
So simple. But that's the way it is. We're always met by somebody else. We're never on our own in the spirit world.
And the spirit guides that apparently attend most everyone are not always or exclusively relatives.
Oh, no. Far from it. Usually the spirit guides often are not relatives.
Ah.
The relatives are around, but the spirit guides who work with people. My mother's own particular guide was a man called Sunrise, a North American Indian. And Ag's guide, when she was here, mm-hmm. was another North American Indian running water.
Hmm. These are people who more or less volunteer to be spirit guides then? They have an interest
That's right.
in it?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's their work. That's what they want to do.
I see.
Yep.
Did they say anything about what they did there all the time? Just talk to people? Did they participate in... Now, this, again, is apparently a different physical realm of
yes.
sorts. What else did they say they did over there?
Well, for example, Mona Hildred was Mrs. Hildred's daughter who passed over as a teenager.
Yes.
She used to come back and tell us, because she always was interested in looking after children.
Yes.
And she was now looking after spirit children.
Oh, yes.
Children who had passed over young and needed to be cared for. And she was doing that. So a lot of people were doing the same kind of things mm-hmm. in music. People who were interested in music were still interested in music there, just the same. It's a big, broad life. Even broader than ours, of course, because it's not restricted by a physical body.
Hmm.
Oh. Where do we start?
There's no end to it, is what it is. It goes on and on. Tom, I want to again touch on the book. It's 70,000 words. It is your story.
Yes.
It is ready for publication right now. Apparently.
It has been edited, yes.
It's ready to go then. So all you need is a publisher who's willing to come forward and underwrite the cost and off to the races.
That's right. That's what we're looking for.
All right. And if anyone out there is interested in contacting Mr. Harrison, 85 years young, life after death at bigfoot.com, or you can certainly email me and I'll get him the word. Michael Roll, very quickly, thank you for being up with us again, my friend. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Indeed. And Tom Harrison, thanks for sharing just a little bit of your fantastic stories and your amazing experiences. We really appreciated it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk again, Tom.
I hope so.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good night. And good night to all of you. Another unusual program for you to think about. Do visit the website. And we'll be back in 21 hours.